Hello and welcome to the PCJ Media Archives. I'm Keith Parent. A question that I get very often from SWLs in their 20s, who don't remember the old days of international radio, is, what was it like listening in the 1950s and 60s? Well, I'm only 40 years old, so I can't really give you an accurate picture of what it was like. When I started listening in the 1970s, international broadcasting was very different. There were two important components to producing good international programming. First, the content. Well, the content is always important. And second, on-air personalities. That's right, on-air personalities. Now, personalities in international radio or even local radio seem very foreign today. But back then, broadcasters like Willis Conover on The Voice of America, Joe Adamov on Radio Moscow, Eddie Starts on Radio Nederland, and Arthur Cushion on Radio New Zealand International were just as important to the programs themselves as the content. Now, to give you an idea of what it was like listening to international radio, let's say in the 1960s, this is what I want you to do. Number one, close your eyes. Okay, you've done that? Good. Number two, turn your radio up. Just pretend you're looking for the interval signal, the one-minute signal that would run at the beginning of each program. The station you're trying to locate is Radio Sweden International. You find them, and you tune in to your favorite program, The Saturday Show. The year, 1966.
Utlandsprogrammet, Sveriges Radio. This is Radio Sweden. Hier ist Radio Schweden. Ici Radio Suède.
Aquí Radio Suecia, Estocolmo.
Aquí Radio Suecia, Estocolmo.
This is Radio Sweden. Utlandsprogrammet, Sveriges Radio. This is Radio Sweden, broadcasting on 9,625 kilocycles in the 31-meter band for listeners in Europe and on 17,845 kilocycles in the 60-meter band for listeners in Eastern North America.
Today's feature program is Saturday Magazine, which follows in a few minutes. First, we have our regular weekly review of foreign affairs, which today discusses Vietnam, Indonesia and Malaysia, and the British cabinet shuffle. In Vietnam, the war was again intensified during the past week. Three American aircraft carriers from the 7th Fleet were ordered to patrol the Tonkin Gulf, putting Hanoi within reach of sea-based bombers. The increased ferocity of air fighting over North Vietnam was confirmed later in the week by the American announcement that 7 planes had been shot down, the largest loss of aircraft suffered by the United States in a single day thus far. However, most of the headlines on Vietnam during the week did not come from Vietnam itself, but from Washington. The sensation was caused by the findings of surveys setting forth the commitments that America would have to make if the war were to be prosecuted to a successful conclusion. According to one of the studies, victory could be won inside 5 years with about 750,000 ground troops, while about 400,000 men would be needed to defeat the enemy within 8 years. The present American ground strength in South Vietnam numbers around 290,000 men. These forecasts apparently created such an alarm that President Johnson felt called upon to summon a special press conference on Tuesday. While not denying the existence of the surveys, he took pains to point out that their findings had not been officially approved by the Department of Defense. The president's choice of words betrayed an embarrassment over the doings of the Pentagon, whose apparent commitment to a military victory conflict with the administration's oft-professed statements of willingness to negotiate at any place and at any time. Moreover, President Johnson has a coming congressional election to think about, and he has every reason to fear the reaction of voters against sending more conscripts to Vietnam. From all indications, the reports of the surveys were released by military commanders in Saigon in order to exert pressure on the authorities in Washington. We apparently have here a case of friction between the war theater and the home front. The generals in the Pentagon seek to create the impression that the conduct of the war is proceeding according to plans, while the officers in Saigon question the effectiveness of pursuing operations at their present levels. All things considered, developments in Vietnam are not calculated to instill President Johnson and his political running mates with the confidence they would like to exhibit in the coming election campaign. On the other hand, they have cause to feel gratified over the course of events in another part of Southeast Asia. Early on Thursday, Indonesia and Malaysia reached an accord which ends the Sukarno policy of confrontation dating from 1963. A serious threat to Western positions in Southeast Asia has thereby been removed. To protect Malaysia, Britain had been compelled to station about 75,000 troops in the area, a commitment which has imposed a heavy financial strain. The British government has already decided to recall 10,000 men as soon as normal relations are restored between Malaysia and Indonesia on the basis of the new agreement. For Indonesia, the groundwork is now laid for an economic housecleaning. First of all, the end of confrontation will save a great deal of expense. Second, and more important, Indonesia has greatly improved her chances of receiving foreign aid now that the adventurous policies associated with President Sukarno have been renounced. As for Sukarno, he is reduced to the status of a figurehead. He still fulminates freely, but that is not likely to stop the next step in the reorientation of Indonesian affairs, which almost certainly will be a bid for readmission to the United Nations. In Britain, the rumors of a cabinet reshuffle that had been circulating since Sunday were unexpectedly materialized 3 days later, confounding those who thought that Prime Minister Wilson would bide his time until the autumn. Most of the interest naturally centers on the swapping of posts between Mr. George Brown and Mr. Michael Stewart, with the former moving into the Foreign Office and the latter taking over as Minister of Economics. Mr. Brown, a man of considerable temperament, had made no secret of his distaste for the government's emergency action on prices and incomes, and it took all of Mr. Wilson's powers of diplomacy to persuade him to stay on. It is generally felt that his transfer represents a victory for the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Mr. Callaghan, who will remain at his post. The way in which Mr. Brown proposes to discharge his new task will be interesting to watch, especially when it is remembered that Mr. Wilson has, to a great extent, been his own foreign secretary. Why Mr. Wilson should have chosen this time to make the reshuffle is the subject of lively speculation. According to one theory, he wished to divert public attention from the government's tarnished prestige. His efforts in this direction will stand or fall, however, on the performance of sterling. And the pound, as the Bank of England will testify, still behaves very erratically. And that concludes our weekly review of foreign affairs. You are listening to Radio Sweden, the international service of the Swedish Broadcasting Corporation. Stay tuned now for Saturday Magazine, presented by Dave Jones.
Hello, everybody. It's time once again for Saturday Magazine, Radio Sweden's regular weekly feature of special reports, interviews, and music from Sweden. Your host is Dave Jones. Well, on today's program, we're going to hear a little bit about Sweden's plans for the big day in September 1967, when all traffic in this country will be switched to driving on the right. Now, for many of you who already drive on the right, this may not be very surprising, but just imagine if you, for example, were to switch over to the left all of a sudden. Anyway, we'll hear about that in a few moments. After that, we'll have an interview of a Swedish nurse, and then there'll be a special announcement from Claude Stevenson, and you should probably have pencil and paper ready for this announcement. And finally, Bob Zanotti will be telling us about a new development in the Swedish milk industry. First, then, let's go over to Trevor Williams, who has a report on this new switch to right-hand traffic here in Sweden.
On September the 3rd, 1967, Sweden's traffic system will be changed from left to right-hand driving. The change will by no means be a simple one. Left-hand traffic has been in effect in Sweden since 1734, and in 1916... automobile drivers were legally required to keep to the left in the face of oncoming traffic and to pass on the right. But as early as 1927, a government committee was appointed to investigate the pros and cons and costs of a changeover to right-hand driving. Periodic studies of such a changeover were conducted through the years, but all motions were tabled or defeated in the Riksdag, the Swedish Parliament. However, in 1961, the Nordic Council and the Consultative Assembly of the Council of Europe stressed the importance of uniformity of roads throughout Europe. Sweden is the only country in continental Europe which has left-hand driving. Great Britain, Ireland, Iceland, Cyprus, and Malta also have left-hand driving, but all are islands and thus disconnected from the continent. After much discussion and continued study of the subject, the Riksdag voted on May the 10th, 1963, to adopt right-hand traffic, sometime during 1967. It was estimated that 4 years would be needed to conduct exhaustive planning programs and to prepare the Swedish population for the changeover. No other country has ever executed such a change under such trying circumstances as those which exist in Sweden. For instance, there is one automobile for every five inhabitants in Sweden. And in 1964, Swedes bought over 250,000 cars, an amazing figure for a country with a population of 7.5 million. September the 3rd, 1967, has been named H Day, the H standing for Höger, which means right in Swedish. The date was selected for a number of reasons. For instance, there are many engineering changes that must be made at street junctions, intersections, and traffic circles, and these changes can be made only during the summer months when weather conditions permit. A second reason for the September the 3rd date is that it's been proved that the public pays more attention to newspapers, radio, and television at this time of the year, since many are returning from summer holidays and are anxious to learn what has happened during their absence. Another reason, perhaps the most important, is that in September, schools will be in session, and therefore children will be able to learn of the change quickly through constant daily reminders from teachers as well as from their parents. The main objective of the changeover is for increased highway safety for both Swedes and foreign drivers. The rapidly growing volume of international drivers has raised the accident risks brought on by drivers being forced to switch from one side of the road to the other when entering and leaving Sweden. It should also be noted that Sweden is surrounded by Denmark, Norway, and Finland, and all three of these neighboring countries have already right-hand traffic. The close relationships among these, the Scandinavian countries, is attested to by the ever-increasing number of border crossings each year. In 1960, 3.7 million vehicles crossed the borders into Sweden. This figure is expected to rise to 7.5 million this year and double to 50 million by 1970. When the Riksdag made its decision to make the change, it was estimated that the entire project would cost about 400 million Swedish kronor, or about $80 million. The goal is uniformity, and Sweden is pursuing that goal with meticulous planning and at great expense. And with Great Britain now undergoing a change from the complicated linear system of feet and yards to the more simplified and popular metric system, who can say which country will follow Sweden to the right of the road?
Trevor Williams was our reporter in that comment on Sweden's plans for changing from its current left-hand drive to right-hand traffic. From time to time here on Radio Sweden, we'll be bringing you interviews with representative professionals and trade people in Sweden as a kind of Meet the People feature. On today's program, our Meet the People feature is concerning a Swedish nurse. And here she is speaking with Radio Sweden reporter Alan Curry.
Florence Nightingale can undoubtedly be called the mother of nursing, that is, the mother of the nursing profession we know today, and Sweden is undoubtedly amongst the top countries in the world regarding qualified nurses. At the moment, I'm sitting with Miss Gunilla Danielsson, who is a qualified nurse, a state-registered nurse at the Sabbatsberg Hospital in Stockholm, the Swedish capital. Miss Danielsson, how long have you been a nurse?
It would be 3 years this fall.
And have you specialized in any particular branch of nursing?
No, it's the general nursing.
What qualifications does a girl need on leaving school to be accepted for training to become a state-registered nurse?
High school examination. You have to have good grades in mathematics, physics and chemistry, among others.
And how long is a nurse's training?
3 years and 3 months.
What does a student nurse learn during this time?
Well, in order to enter the school, you have to have a 3 months probation period to see whether you will be qualified or not. And then you start in the nursing school with a 3 months theory course where you learn many subjects as anatomy, pathology, physiology, medicine and bacteriology and etc., among others.
And the three-year course goes on, I should imagine, with experience in the ward, in the operating theatres and so on.
Yes, in almost all the fields in nursing.
Now, today in Sweden, is there a shortage of nurses?
Yes, there is a shortage of nurses.
And why is this?
Many of the girls leave the nursing field after they finish their school, the training, to get married. Many of them go abroad, and this way there will be a shortage in the big city, as for example in Stockholm.
Now, you mentioned many of them start nursing when they get married. Now, is there any reason why they should stop nursing? Of course, if a girl gets married and has children, that's quite understandable, but what about those that get married and don't immediately have children?
Well, I think many of them prefer to work half a day, if it's possible. And it has started now quite a many openings for half a day work in the wards. And also, I think the pay, what you get paid as a nurse, is not really what you have been trained for.
That brings us to a subject. Miss Danielsson, how much do you earn a month?
About 1,500 kroner a month.
That will be somewhere in the region of $300 or £100. Now, you say there is a shortage of nurses because many of them who have qualified have left the nursing profession either because they have got married or for other personal reasons. Now, is this the only reason there is a shortage?
No, of course not. It depends very much on the working conditions, too, and the working hours and the pay.
Now, all girls wanting to become nurses, are they all accepted?
No, they are not. During this 3 months probation period, many of them does not qualify. And also during the first 3 months theory course, you can easily see which one will qualify or not.
Now, you've been nursing for some years, and as a qualified nurse, can you choose your working hours?
No, you cannot, really. You have to work from 7 in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, or from 11 o'clock till 8 o'clock in the evening, or from 8 o'clock in the evening till 7 in the morning.
As a nurse who is qualified in Sweden, do you have the opportunity to work abroad with your Swedish diploma?
Yes, we have many opportunities to do that. And in England and America, there is no problem.
Why did you choose the nursing profession?
Well, it's hard to tell. I think I always wanted to become a nurse, even when I was a child. And I think any girl get in contact with sick people, more or less, would like to help them.
Would you recommend nursing to a young girl today who is thinking of entering the profession?
Yes, I would like to recommend it. But of course, she has to work in a hospital first as a nurse aide or something like that and see whether she likes to be with sick people. But it's a very nice profession and you have a lot of responsibilities. But also you gain something in the way of your own confidence. You help people, you help the doctors. And what more can you ask for?
Today in Meet the People, we have met Miss Gunilla Danielsson, a nurse at the Sabbatsberg Hospital in Stockholm.
Radio Sweden reporter Alan Curry was interviewing a Swedish nurse. It's time now for that special announcement I told you about from Claude Stevenson, and get your pencils and papers ready.
Beginning on Saturday, September 3rd, Radio Sweden will again be broadcasting its series, Swedish by Radio. This is a beginner's course in the Swedish language and consists of 30 lessons. And if you follow it closely, after 30 weeks you will have learned all the most common words and expressions in the Swedish language. There is a textbook to accompany the course, and the textbook can be had free by writing to Swedish by Radio, Radio Sweden, Box 955, Stockholm 1, Sweden, and asking for it. To our old listeners, I should say that this is the same course we have run several times before, so if you already have the course book, please don't send for another one. We are repeating Swedish by Radio by popular demand, and I can now announce that at the end of the 30 lessons of this course, we will begin broadcasting a new course in Swedish, a continuation course, meant to follow up this introductory course for those of you who want to learn a bit more Swedish. It will be necessary for you to have learned the material in the first course to get the most out of the second course, which will be primarily in Swedish. In this continuation course, we will learn to read Swedish newspapers by reading actual articles, advertisements, features, and so on from Swedish newspapers. The new course, like the beginner's course, is being prepared by Siv Higalin, one of Sweden's foremost experts in the teaching of languages, and by me, Claude Stevenson. Those of you who have already taken part in Swedish by Radio once before are encouraged to listen every Saturday to brush up your knowledge, and then to continue with the second course, which will begin in April next year, after the 30 lessons of the first course have been broadcast. And for those of you who have not taken part in Swedish by Radio before, send in your request for a free textbook right away. If you live outside of Europe, please send your request by airmail so as to be sure to get your textbook before the course begins. The address again is Swedish by Radio, Radio Sweden, Box 955, Stockholm 1, Sweden.
Most of you may already know that in Scandinavia, and certainly in Sweden, milk and dairy products are a very important part of the diet. And here, with a special report on a recent development in the milk industry in Sweden, is Radio Sweden reporter Bob Zanotti.
Sweden has long held the reputation of possessing a healthy appetite for milk and dairy products, and the Swedes are quite successful at living up to this reputation and seem eager to do so. At breakfast, lunch, dinner, at virtually any time of the day, you can see in Swedish restaurants, cafeterias, or even offices, a parade of hostesses working feverishly to keep up with the demand. However, in recent times, quite a controversy has arisen over milk containers. For the past few years, there have been two principal kinds of milk containers used here in Sweden. The first type is a 1 liter, about a quart, brick-shaped carton, which opens easily at the top corner. This one pours well and can be stored almost anywhere in the refrigerator where a few inches of space can be found. However, the second type, which also holds 1 liter, but is pyramid in shape, measures about 8 inches on its sides. To open this container, the user must snip off one of the carton's tips in order to pour out the milk. This is, then, the container which is the root of the current controversy. While on a visit to Sweden a couple of years ago, a Swedish friend and I decided to stop into a Stockholm cafeteria for lunch. Joining the procession of anxious eaters, we took our trays and passed along the shelves of delicious-looking foods, choosing what we wanted, and then proceeding at last to the beverage section. My friend and I both grabbed for milk. When we had seated ourselves and begun organizing for the meal, my friend took up his small container of milk and held it just above the table. "Have you ever seen one like this before?" he asked. "Do you know, I have often wondered how they get the milk in there. But even more, I wonder, after buying one to take home, where I shall put it." My friend was, of course, philosophizing about that pyramid-shaped carton, and I could perfectly well understand what he meant. But good news has finally come to the dismayed milk-drinking Swedish public. Milk Central, the company which supplies milk to most Swedish cities, recently announced the coming of a brand new milk container, only bigger, and judging from the many complaints about the old one, much better. This new container, which holds 2 liters instead of just one, is a fine rectangular design. Its top is in the form of a peaked hood resembling a rooftop. The pouring spout is self-forming and returns neatly back into the hood. Probably the greatest blessing of this new container is that it can be stored in a relatively small place. Its overall height is only about 9 inches, and its square size measure only about 3 inches each. In Sweden, where the majority of the population are apartment dwellers, this is very important because the worst problem of anyone who lives in an apartment is space. In most Swedish apartments, the kitchens are comparatively large, but still, refrigerators are generally smaller than those found in private homes. As a measure of how the Swedish public wanted a new type of milk container, many newspapers greeted Milk Central's announcement with full detailed stories and pictures of Milk Central packaging experts proudly displaying the new container. According to Milk Central, the new 2-liter containers, which have been available less than a month, are already accounting for 37% of sales. The old troublesome pyramid-shaped cartons are still being used, but they are fated to be replaced by the new shape just as soon as the supply of the old ones is exhausted. Just now, only some of the larger Swedish cities have the new containers, but plans are afoot to make them available to almost all of Milk Central's customers. So now, with the new 2-liter milk containers, complete happiness has again come to the Swedish milk-drinking public. Housewives are happy because now there is no trouble finding a place for milk in the refrigerator, and Milk Central is also happy in the thought that now customers will be more satisfied and perhaps will find room for another 2 liters of milk in their already well-stocked refrigerators.
Bob Zanotti was telling us about a new development in milk containers here in Sweden. It's time now on Saturday Magazine for me to tell you about next week's programs here on Radio Sweden as we present Preview. Tomorrow, Sunday, Radio Sweden introduces a brand new program, The Pops. And our host on this program will be Roger Wallace. On Monday, we're continuing with our special series on the Scandinavian countries under the general title Four of a Kind. And Monday's country will be Finland, Sweden's neighbor to the east. On Tuesday, it'll be time for our special program for all DXers. Then on Wednesday, Al Simon will be presenting his regular weekly program, Highlights from Sweden. On Thursday, in Mailbag, I will be answering many of the letters you listeners send in to us. And on Friday, it's time once again for Alan Curry's feature for our younger listeners as he presents Teenage Time. These programs, next week, here on Radio Sweden. And now I see by the clock on our studio wall that it's come around time once again for us to bring to a close this week's edition of Saturday Magazine. But before I go, I want to remind you all that we welcome and we answer, either on the air or by post, all your cards and letters, whether you write to comment, criticize, or suggest. Our address, Radio Sweden, Box 955, Stockholm 1, Sweden. Until next week, then, this is your host, Dave Jones, saying thanks for listening.
That brings to an end Radio Sweden's daily transmission at 1400 hours Greenwich Mean Time, 900 hours Eastern Standard Time, on two frequencies, 9,625 kilocycles in the 31-meter band for listeners in Europe, and on 17,845 kilocycles in the 16-meter band for listeners in Eastern North America. We'll be back again with our transmission to North America in a quarter of an hour, on the same wavelength as now, and also in the evening, at 2045 Eastern Standard Time on 11,805 kilocycles in the 25-meter band. Our next broadcast in English to Europe will be at 2200 hours Greenwich Mean Time in the 49-meter band on 6,065 kilocycles and at 2330 on medium wave on 254.7 meters. We also transmit to Europe at 1100 hours Greenwich Mean Time on 9,625 kilocycles in the 31-meter band. We invite you to join us again tomorrow, same time and the same frequency.
Your comments and questions about these programs from PCJ are appreciated. You can send us an email, mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. Thank you for listening.